The Heel of Achilles by E. M. Delafield. Chapter 1. I am an orphan, reflected Lydia Raymond with immense satisfaction. She was a very intelligent little girl of 12 years old, and she remembered very well that when her father had died out in China 3 years ago, it was her mother who had been the center of attention and compassion. People had spoken about her poor dead father, and had praised him and pitied him, but their real attention had all been for the widow, who was there under their eyes, pathetic and sorrow-stricken. Lydia herself had been poor little thing, but Grandpapa and her aunts and uncles had all told her that it was her mother who must be thought of now, and she knew that they kept on saying to one another that the child will be a comfort to poor Mary. Her own individuality, which she had felt so strongly, did not seem to count at all, and Lydia had quite silently resented that intensely ever since she could remember anything at all. Once her mother had read her some extracts of old letters from her dead father, letters which had once come so regularly every week in thin blue envelopes with the Hong Kong postmark. "Kiss our baby Lydia for me. I hope she is a good little thing always. Some day, when these years of hard work are over, you won't have to sacrifice yourself any more, my poor Mary." And later on, in the last letter of all, "The child's life is only a continuation of ours, my Mary." Long afterwards, Lydia, who never forgot the words, came to see them as the expression of a man's eternal wistful attempt to live on in the generation supplanting his own. But when her mother read them aloud to her in a voice choked with tears, something in Lydia revolted violently. "My life is my own," she thought stubbornly, "not just a continuation of somebody else's." With that acute clarity of vision that enabled her to analyze certain aspects of her childhood's world, she once told herself, "They don't love me for myself at all. Grandpapa doesn't love me the least bit. He doesn't love anybody. And Mother loves me because I'm her child, and the aunts love me because I'm Father's child, and they think I'm a comfort to Mother." She could hardly remember her father, and though at first she had shed tears over his death, Lydia had quickly dried them. "Now, dear, you must be a good little girl and not cry and make poor Mother more unhappy than she is already," had said the harassed-looking Aunt Evelyn. "You know you must think of her now. You'll have to be her comfort." And almost immediately afterwards, Aunt Evelyn had said to Lydia's mother, do give way and cry, dearie. It will be so much better for you. I know you're wonderful, but you'll suffer for it later on. You're bound to." After that, it had not needed Aunt Evelyn's further observation that poor little Lydia didn't know what her loss meant to dry Lydia's perfunctory tears with the sting of an inflexible pride. She would not cry again until they were prepared to concede to her the major right to affliction. She did not love her mother very much. It is more common than is generally allowed for an intelligent child, still in bondage to her natural instinct, reinforced by the tradition of allegiance to natural authorities, to couple that allegiance with a perfectly distinct antipathy to the personality of either or both parents. Lydia's dislike of her mother's sentimentality, her constant vacillation of purpose, and her incessant garrulity was only unchildlike in her calm analysis of it, and in the conscious restraint that she put upon it. Mrs. Raymond had often said, sometimes in Lydia's hearing, that she would welcome death. "But for little Lydia, I think I should have put an end to it all long ago. But how can I leave her when she has only me?" Mrs. Raymond, however, without any intervention of her own, when Lydia was 12 years old, reached the haven to which, since her husband's death, she had so often aspired. I am an orphan. Lydia, already a dignified and self-contained little girl, bore herself with a new, pale composure. It was for her that Aunt Evelyn, once more summoned from her shabby, untidy house at Wimbledon, was now hastily ordering mourning, and to whom the Wimbledon cousins had written brief, blotted letters of compassion and sympathy, and it was her future that Aunt Evelyn and Uncle George and Aunt Beryl